Following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel, and joining me tonight is Shane Settner.
Yo.
We are talking about our latest trio of movies, Take Shelter, Solo, A Star Wars Story, and The Beach. We can't just pick three good movies for our trios. We can't do it. We won't do it. And the tradition continues with this latest three, but we're going to get the best of the easy, far and away. If anybody actually saw these three movies, there's not a single person who disagreed that it was the best of the three. Jeff Nichols, Take Shelter. This is a movie starring Michael Shannon. He plays a handyman, a contractor type. He's got a wife and he's got a young daughter who is hearing impaired, and they're making it work. Everything's okay for the most part. The money's all right. The house is, they're making their mortgage payments. But he starts having these dreams of uncertainty, in the represented by rolling clouds and storms coming in that only he can see in his dreams. And they escalate in the dreams. The dreams escalate to the point where people are abducting his daughter out of his car. And he starts turning the fiction of these dreams, because they are so vivid, cinematically and within the character's head, into reality in the real world. He uses equipment from his job to dig out a storm shelter. He buries a shipping container and outfits that, alienating his family in the process. But is he right? Who knows? The movie doesn't necessarily leave it wide open. I mean, we're going to talk about the ending, certainly, because it's one of the great uncertain endings of the last 10 years or so, if not longer. But it's a psychodrama. It's something of a mystery. It's a family drama. And more than anything, I think, this is a movie that perfectly captures the post-financial crisis era in 2011 when it was released, and in 2018 still.
And some of the best stunt casting this side of Winter's Bone.
Oh my, I mean, what are we talking about here?
I mean, this town hall scene.
Oh, sure, yes, yes. Everything in Take Shelter builds to a volcanic eruption. Classic Michael Shannon. I feel like this got him his sorority letter cunt punt job. Just this scene alone. It was all building to this, where I choose to believe that the extras in the scene, who are very much extras picked up off the street, may or may not have sent in headshots to Jeff Nichols. I don't know. I don't know where he filmed this. It seems very much he just set up in a town somewhere.
100%. It was like the most rural... pancake dinner, spaghetti
fish
dinner
fry.
Type, fish fry. Like, it was it. That was it. Like, if you look up a definition of a Indiana fish fry, that
church
is
social.
Yeah, that's it. That's it right there.
Get some German potato salad.
Yeah, although
and
it was,
some whiting.
I guess it was Catholics. There'd be alcohol there, but
of course. But Michael Shannon's character Curtis explodes at this meeting. And I choose to believe that the extras were not told this was going to happen, because their reactions are, they were already perfectly cast and the set was perfectly dressed for a nondescript Midwestern Friday night gathering. But their reactions are equally perfectly Midwestern, in that no one will look at him, no one will acknowledge him as he struts around screaming and yelling and losing his mind. And everyone is just staring into their German potato salad.
That's right. Avoiding any sort of confrontation.
Perfect.
Yes.
Maybe everybody would have done that. When someone is losing their mind, sure. Don't engage. I'm sure someone on the New York City subway could tell us a very similar anecdote of someone doing more or less the exact same thing.
Well, probably a lot more masturbating on the subway, though.
Sure, sure. Or just a person pretending to be blind and asking for money. Just everybody ignore and look down. Look down at your phones now.
Yeah.
No one had any phones in Take Shelter to distract from this looming fiasco. But that's the culmination of this movie. And the hour and a half build-up to this giant moment, and it's not that the movie ends there, because it doesn't, but the build-up to that, again, is a perfect representation of feeling stable and feeling unstable at the same time. Taking for granted your financial... And your safety, current scenario, and just dreading the worst, knowing the worst can happen at a moment's notice, and being consumed with that dread, and being unprepared for it when it happens. With the government shutdown that lasted the first month of 2019, there was a lot of talk about workers, educated workers who are living paycheck to paycheck. And there have been studies continuously done since the financial crisis that a large percentage, if not a plurality of American families, when confronted with a very small emergency, an emergency with a dollar value on it, a few hundred dollars, $400, $1,000, they don't have it. They don't have it.
Yeah.
They have to sell something, they have to borrow, but they don't have it. And this has persisted, you know, through 400% stock market growth, through a return to full employment. We're still deeply unstable. And we're not all probable schizophrenics like Michael Shannon's Curtis is, but we live in that world. And this movie just perfectly gets at that feeling.
Now, the irony here is everyone in that town hall is probably a Dave Ramsey fan because they listen to AM radio.
Yes, and they're right to be. Dave Ramsey has his moments, no question. He's a smart guy.
So, but they also...
Someone has to keep calling in to the Dave Ramsey show. He doesn't... It's not all... It's not all Braveheart freedom screams. It's usually people that have deeply fucked up their finances. Oh,
I like that you remember the freedom screams.
It's very important. Oh, yes.
It's an addicting show.
I mean, after a certain point, it does start to repeat itself, certainly, because you can only listen to so many. He more or less says the same thing to everybody.
I mean, which is, yeah.
That but part, it's not
that part ever bothered
difficult,
me.
But it is and it isn't.
Yeah. The part that really bothered me, he's like, no, don't go to college. Go wait tables, go do this.
Or don't go to college until you have the lump sum of money.
To pay for college.
Yes.
Which is absurd. Yes. Because that's just... I mean, that's just the caste system, right? Like, you might as well.
I don't think he's operating from a... Well, I mean, he does send his kids to college, but surely there is some distance between Dave Ramsey, media millionaire, real estate magnate, and the person he was, you know, 30 years ago when, you know, public education, public college education was still pretty reasonable. So, yeah, it's not good advice. The point is, Take Shelter is... one of the best movies of the decade for exactly this reason, because for the same reason that Taxi Driver is one of the best movies of its generation, people will watch this movie in 25, 30 years, and they will have a clear sense of what it was like to be living in that specific period of time, like 3 or 4 years out from the financial crisis.
Maybe.
Which, for my mind, I'm 35, the biggest event of my lifetime, no question. Berlin Wall came down in my lifetime, USSR collapsed, 9/11. I almost said Monica Lewinsky. That didn't happen to me.
Thought it was when a man murdered your wife and children in a dark alley, and you had to become a vengeful superhero for like that.
You're confusing me with Charles Bronson, and that was in the 70s, anyways.
Oh, okay.
So, right. But I like that you're thinking about my history. I do talk about that all the time. How my life is like Death Wish, even though it predates my birth by like 15 years.
Get things
like
confused.
9/11, it's the financial crisis. The entire fucking world almost collapsed.
Maybe this is why I'm not like so, and I think this is a perfectly good movie, and it ticks all the boxes. I can't figure out, I couldn't put a finger on it until maybe just now, like why am I not so excited as you? Because maybe it's just like too close to real life where I'm just like, eh.
I mean, part of it too is this, I just fully click in with this movie. You can't always explain exactly why that happens, but just everything it's doing is making sense to me and reinforcing its theme of insecurity and instability. And it finds the perfect metaphor for that with mental illness, which is just the flipping of a switch as far as Curtis is concerned. Like, one day he was fine, and now he's decompensating in ways that he can't tell what is real and what is not anymore. One of my favorite TV shows from this era is Hannibal. And Hannibal has a lot of signature images, but one of those images is Hannibal Lecter asks Will Graham, who Hannibal knows Will is sick in the head, but Will does not. And Hannibal asks Will to draw a clock. The camera, from Will's perspective, draws a correct clock with the circle of the 12 numbers. He hands it back to Hannibal, and Hannibal sees that it's not. It's like an oval, and all the numbers are sliding to the side. So Will thinks he's fine. Hannibal knows he is not, and then it spirals out from there. And that's just a very potent and immediate way of demonstrating what mental illness is, in the same way that Take Shelter is, with these extremely vivid dreams, magical realism, surrealism dreams that Jeff Nichols includes, that are incredibly potent for not being a parent, but like his reaction and his daughter's reaction when they are being, when his daughter, who is a fantastic young actress, I feel like they tortured the shit out of that girl emotionally to get the expressions on her face that they did, or maybe threw a giant fit in a cookout on her and she looked legitimately scared.
It's probably a brilliant idea to not let your kids speak, because kid actors suck at when they talk.
Fair. Totally fair. Yes. Hire more deaf actresses and actors, especially when they're young, because you just eliminate that stumbling block right away. But his second dream, when these shadowy figures break into his truck while he's on the side of the road, they're having a crash. First, he wakes up, and she's, for all he knows, she's been sitting there for who knows how long with this look of terror on her face. And then they break in, and his look of terror translating into him wordlessly screaming as he gets out of bed. It's a level of panic that doesn't exist outside of like bad horror movies and shrieking like 20-somethings. It's an incredibly palpable movie. I'm raving.
Yes.
I'm raving. I love this movie.
I'm not trying to be too critical.
No, please push back, because again, I'm raving.
This is going to be super raving. It's very, like, my critiques
are... Rave is a good thing. Raving can be a bad thing.
Yeah, well, I cannot wait to rave about the beach later. I just don't want to be critical, like, because what you're saying is right. 100% right. But I'm still trying to figure out why I don't like this movie. And I've come to another conclusion, part of it.
Don't like this movie?
Don't like it as much as you.
Okay.
And part of it might be, it stresses me out.
Sure.
For him to be such flagrant violation with his wife. So it's like adding an extra stressor to me the whole time. Like he's making her, like, I don't know, like you can look at me right now and you look at me and say, like, look at me, John. You've seen what's on top.
I look at the wall when we're recording.
Yeah, like a good,
I'm mildly autistic.
Because yeah, a good Midwesterner, right? I have a terrible haircut right now.
Yeah.
And I have my hair up in a ponytail holder.
True fact.
Because when I was hurt, I needed a haircut right before I got hurt, and then I got hurt.
I couldn't
drive, and I'll be damned if I was gonna ask my wife to do everything around the house, and then hey, drive me for a haircut. Let alone,
sure,
I'm going to put a fucking shipping container in our backyard. That's stressful.
I think the movie communicates that he does this very quickly, that he does have the equipment to do it very quickly. And it doesn't initially seem so crazy. I think it only seems crazy when he is getting the heavy equipment. And by that point, it's too late. I feel like it's already done and buried by that point.
I mean, I thought it was pretty crazy. We went to a bank and got a loan out to get the shipping container.
As any Midwesterner will tell you, I'm sure many banks will allow a husband to take out a loan without telling his wife. I don't feel like that's a problem in the Midwest.
Yeah.
For like a little corner store bank.
I mean,
that is Fifth Thirds.
I guess you would imagine, who owned the house, but
sure.
Anyway,
it doesn't appear that she works. For good reason, like the daughter has her own set of issues. I think her source of income is the yard sale stuff and like the craft stuff. She would certainly have an Etsy store now, but in like early 2010s, pre that existing, she had to debase herself in front of greedy 90-year-olds.
Ugh.
So, yeah, I would imagine it was in his name. I don't. Yeah, I don't.
Do you think people an old sad lady negotiates with her,
still in the garage sale, good,
and ask her for like way less, and then say I can pay you like $1 for that, and she's like, no, I can't do less than 10. Then she goes, fine, I'll take $2.
I'm sure there's some old lady,
and she's like, I'll pay you in change.
I'm sure there's some old lady somewhere who bargained the shit out of something at a yard sale and then ostentatiously tossed it in the trash after she got her way. Because the joy is not the item. The joy is in the chiseling.
Well, do you think people do that to Etsy people? You should ask
Probably more difficult, Ashley. I would imagine. Ashley, what do you think?
Ashley, I'm sure you're listening to this, so
just write in. Tell us about this text. One scene in a movie you surely did not watch.
Yeah.
Sadly, Take Shelter is not streaming anywhere, but luckily I own the Blu-ray, and it's an excellent buy. One of my smartest buys. There's my Zester, and there's my Take Shelter Blu-ray. I get a lot of use out of my Zester, I gotta say.
Do you ever actually zest your fingers?
I worry about that, but no, not yet. I don't think it's quite that sharp, but maybe it is, and I'm just waiting for the inevitable day when I find out.
I got my knuckles once. It was a little cold, so like you know, your skin's a little thin anyway at that point of the year. And
You may or may not have been using lemon juice on it, which I'm sure only intensified the lesson that you learned in that moment.
Oh, did I ever tell my worst cooking accident?
Go ahead.
I was trying to do like these like shrimp stuffed jalapenos.
Okay.
And they were fresh jalapenos, like from my garden. And
I think I know where this is going.
I absolutely wiped my face with my fingers.
Could have been worse.
And then got it in my eyes and up my nose somehow. And
okay. I was going bathroom.
Awful.
Bathroom.
Oh, bathroom God. Zone. No, this is bad enough to get in your eyes and your contacts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that is awful. You're incapacitated.
Well, because it got in my face, and I was like, God, this is burning. And I looked up real quick. I'm like, how to fix this? And I just went with the first answer.
I've thrown milk in my face.
Yeah, that was a good decision to make. Mm-hmm. I read the one that said, just splash water on your face. Which is bad because that spreads the oil.
No good.
And it spread terrible to my advice. Eyes and my nose.
The internet fucked that one up.
Yes, it did.
It's got a Sterling track record until you know, then.
Later when I look down below the answer, everyone's like, fuck that guy. He's a troll. So I'll just make it worse. I'm like, it did. So I had
to. He gives the homeopathic remedy of rubbing more jalapeno onto your eye. It's like when you mark a permanent marker on a dry erase board. And the solution is to use an erasable marker to get that permanent.
Yeah, off. Exactly.
Just the same. It's the exact same with the jalapeno in your eye.
I covered my face in like pineapple yogurt.
Smart. Whatever it takes.
A delicious solution.
I mean, but then you've got citric acid to get in your eyes with the pineapple.
Yeah, I mean, at that point.
Terrible. Like, and then you realize that there wasn't real yogurt or pineapple in the yogurt, and you have larger problems again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Terrible. What a terrible day.
Fake pineapple.
What a horrible day that you had then.
Yeah. One of the worst days in my life.
Curtis in Take Shelter is having a series of terrible days leading up to the ending of the movie, which we're not quite going to talk about yet. We mentioned the potluck blowout, which, you know, some people...
Potluck blowout usually means something totally different.
Some chilly night. Yes. Some people will say that more acting, which Michael Shannon is 100% doing here, doesn't necessarily equal the best acting. It would be the difference between like Daniel Day-Lewis as in There Will Be Blood versus Daniel Day-Lewis in Phantom Thread. One is, he's not necessarily better or worse than one or the other, but one is certainly more. Michael Shannon is more in this moment in Take Shelter. I still would call it one of the best scenes of the last decade in movies. I have watched it cut out of the movie. He's incredible. In that scene, just completely losing his shit, and then totally breaking down at the end once he sees how much he has legitimately terrified his wife and his daughter. The reactions of the townspeople and the extras. Oh boy, that is a winner. That is a winner. That is a winner.
Like there is, I've been thinking about
editing. You exclaimed in the middle of it.
I did.
You did.
I've been thinking about editing more in movies.
Mm-hmm.
I've been trying to keep like more of a conscious.
Sure.
The Oscars are going to say the Oscars are putting that in a commercial, and everyone's pissed off this year.
Not anymore. That's back in the yes.
Good,
back.
Because this scene's probably a perfect example of flawless editing, right?
Yeah.
There's no way that they all reacted that well the whole time, and the fact that you and I cannot figure out if those are legit reactions.
Well, I mean, the more times they do it, the less legit they become. I think they fucking nailed it on the first try. It wouldn't surprise me at all. Like Michael Shannon is a theater actor first and foremost.
But it wasn't just like one shot, was it?
No, but there are other cameras in the room.
That's what I'm saying. Just
sure. I see what you're saying. Yeah, so that's the cookout. That's the overstated moment in the film. Equally potent, I think, are the understated moments And I don't know if you mentioned this is a North Midwestern film. It takes place in Ohio. I want to say Northern Ohio. And that implies certain things about the people that live there, namely that they are stoics who can't express their emotions in any way. So when Curtis's best friend, his coworker, played by best friend and coworker, played by Shea Whigham, when he tells Curtis at the very start of the movie, shortly after these visions have begun, that very simply, that he has a good life. I think that's the nicest thing you can say to a man. You look at his life and say that's good. He may as well have given him a full hug and kissed him on the lips in this moment, because that is true in its simplicity, in its elegance, and in the way that Wiggum conveys how difficult is not the right word, but how he's probably never said that to anybody else. He's able to convey how special this is that he's saying it. And the film, Jeff Nichols and Jessica Chastain and Shannon and the actress playing the daughter, they convey also that this thing is good and that it is at stake and it is worth saving. And it's just very, very simple, effortless even. It takes like two scenes to instantly link you to this family's well-being. And it didn't require any Michael Shannon screaming and vein popping and eye bulging,
Hey,
as great as all those things are.
the nicest thing a Midwesterner has ever said to me, a man has ever said to me outside of my immediate family is that I think you're better than ranch dressing.
You could be on my Euchre team any day.
Oh, well, that is a special thing to be
Shane
invited to
has to
someone's Euchre
excuse
team.
himself to go wipe some tears out of his
Oh,
eyes.
that's not what anyway.
Euchre's a dumb game, and the only time I played it, I got yelled at by a serious Midwesterner. So fuck it, not
I
fun.
almost had a girlfriend break up with me for that reason.
We're dumb people.
We are dumb.
We're
We are
stupid people of
dumb.
German
Just
transplants.
emotionally repressed.
Ugh. So the ending of Take Shelter. I'm gonna let you kick off there. Just a quick synopsis of what's happening is that there are the whole family is on the beach, at Myrtle Beach, and the music implying a dream starts up, and Curtis and his daughter playing on the beach look off into the distance, and they're pretty obviously seeing a storm. Then it cuts back to Jessica Chastain is in the house. Sees the same storm, comes out, finally get to see the storm itself, and it is bigger than any other storm that has existed previously in the movie. She holds her hands out, and she's in the same oily water, oily substance that was dripping on Curtis from earlier is now dripping on her. He goes back to join her, and she looks at him, and she says, "Okay," or something to that effect. What's happening, Shane?
I
What's
don't know.
happening
I
there?
don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I think
Okay.
it's intentionally ambiguous.
I mean, there are only so many things that it can be. He's either like an actual prophet, which I think undercuts the symbolic value of the movie,
Agreed.
or it's another dream that he's having where he's just incorporated his family into his thinking as more than victims.
I hope that's what it is.
That's what very much what I think it is. They're together. They're gonna figure this probable schizophrenia out as a family. And it's not going to be easy. The storm is still coming, but they'll be able to at least paddle in the same direction
No, I mean,
together.
she took the beach money out earlier too to pay for psychiatrist too, I
Okay,
believe.
so just like plot-wise, they shouldn't be there, you're
They
saying?
shouldn't. I mean, I mean, overall, I just I think it's just me rooting for it being a dream.
Yeah, I've read like some YouTube comments, not some, like a good amount, saying that it is face value, like he was right the whole time.
Well,
That's dumb. That's people are bad at movies in
YouTube
that case.
is like the worst of the comments as well,
Sure.
so.
It wasn't like Nazi references and gay slurs. It was like reasoned sentence structure in it at a minimum. You know, I don't
Oh,
ask a
the
lot for
dream or the
the
comments?
comments. I
Oh,
don't
okay.
ask a lot.
Because I don't remember any Nazi stuff in the dream either, but I'm not as good at watching movies as
Yeah,
you
I
are.
have low expectations for YouTube comments, clearly, but as far as reasoned
Those seem about the
discussions to
right
be had
YouTube
there,
expectations,
yeah.
yeah.
It seemed like if you were to confront this person who can't, or these people who just don't know how to watch movies, I'm sure they would like take offense at what they felt was a fully formed opinion, but they're wrong. There's no way it's real. That would drastically devalue the movie, I think.
I'm with you.
The last thing to say about Take Shelter is the instant where it could turn into like a Last House on the Left, The Shining type man murders his family type of movie. When
God damn, yeah.
Very stressful.
Yes.
It is. Yes. It is stretched, and I didn't realize how easily this movie, like, Jeff Nichols is an optimistic director, I think, fundamentally. His movies, he's made 5 or 6 movies, all set in more or less the swath of America. He makes movies in the South as well, but he is fundamentally optimistic, so he couldn't make this kind of movie if he wanted to. But other directors, I mean, there is a big storm after The Shelter is created, and the family does go down there, and it does do its purpose. They're safe throughout the storm. However bad it was, it's unclear if it was like a, you know, if it was like Twister style spinning cows through the air and lifting Philip Seymour Hoffman's truck off the ground. I don't think that happened. But he wants to stay, they want to go. And a different movie could end like 3 minutes from now with him emerging a month later with like blood all over him because he killed them instead of letting them go up.
Right. Like, I was afraid of accidental killing of daughter.
Sure.
And which I again thought
would be just,
it was gonna be
cheap as shit and devalue. Yeah. Yes. That would be a betrayal of what had come before.
Killing
But he's so far gone at that point. It is possible.
Killing the wife to save the daughter seems like a very rational, logical next step of the movie, and I was terrified of that. What a really good scene.
And this is like Dexter heyday. So didn't Dexter spend a good chunk of his formative years in a shipping container in a puddle of blood or something like that?
It's like a day.
Okay, yeah.
Formative years, sure. Yeah.
Jeff Nichols is clearly heavily influenced by Dexter.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen any of his other movies, Shotgun Stories, Mud, just all about secret serial killer in Miami. Neckbone. Right. Neckbone, sure. Yeah. Neckbone makes another glorious return to the Munich Movie Club podcast.
Our Neckbone Etsy shop. Not going well.
I was wrong to sink my life savings in it, and now I'm having visions of storms and crows and shadowy figures stealing daughters I don't have. But everything will be fine. Shut up about it. Don't invite me to any fish fries anytime soon. You never know what'll happen. This is a great, great movie. I underestimated how great it was. The last time I made like a best movies of the decade so far, I had it an A-. And in the middle of that list of 100, which you can see on my Letterboxd account, this will be in my top 10 almost certainly at the end of this year when I make my best list of the best movies of the decade. It is superb. It is timely. It is historically evocative. It's got great acting, it's got great directing, it's got great tension and mood generation. Everyone's in complete control of their powers. A movie. Fantastic. Great. Buy the Blu-ray.
I have an A-.
Buy the Blu-ray or a Zester. Both will fill your life with joy.
Yeah, A-, because I just can't. It just doesn't get me there. That's fair. I reserve the right to.
Honestly, it didn't get me there the first time I saw it either. This is the second time I had seen it, and yeah, I just needed another viewing for whatever reason. I don't know.
Yeah.
Our next movie, we're going to be less effusive about, or at least I am. I don't know about Shane. Solo: A Star Wars Story, directed by Ron Howard. Why don't we let I'm going to let Shane take the lead on this one, and why don't you tell us how you felt about about Solo?
This is gonna take an effort. Hang on.
Okay.
Mm.
Sure. Mm. Wetting those vocal cords. Mm. Get that larynx all moisturized and ready to go.
This movie fucking sucks. Like, honestly, there have been very few movies where I'm like, this movie is so bad I cannot finish it. This is one of those movies. And I stayed and watched all of Matthew Broderick's Godzilla in the theater by myself.
We are nearing Mediocre Madness, our annual tournament that we put out on Twitter or Facebook, I don't even remember, every year. And I'm being reminded of some of the other movies that we've watched over the course of this last year, and they would include garbage piles such as Cutthroat Island.
This is worse than Cutthroat Island.
Tusk.
This is... Ooh. God! Like, because Tusk...
It can't be. Actively... I'm no fan of Solo. It can't be worse than Tusk.
Because Tusk... Which I feel like you also gave an F. Insulting its audience.
Yes.
And they both deserve an F. I don't know. I gotta
I have blown up Shane's world.
Like, who picked Solo?
I don't know. We voted as a group now. Drew? It's secret and it's silent, and I don't know. I don't fully understand how ranked voting works.
I don't hate Star Wars, and I don't think they're awesome either, but I'm fine with them. And
that's more or less where I am.
I think people who shit on them are doing it just to get attention. But this is the worst. This is the worst it could possibly get. It's so fucking dumb.
I'm amazed it inspired such intense feelings, because for me, it's just a totally acceptable, I guess. I would go a level beneath acceptable. I can't come up with the word right now, but that's where it's at for me. It's just, it's nothing. It's meh.
It's on par with, like, no, it's worse, too, because there's no excuse. Like, you remember Will Smith's Wild Wild West in the 90s?
Sure.
That was based off an awesome TV show. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, we're going to take an awesome TV show and take a gritty Western or poppy Western and turn it into steampunk Western. Makes no goddamn sense. And then
putting this in that category, I think, is reasonable.
Zings and zingers. And then there was you take all this fucking money and you pour it into it and you make the same mistake we were making in the 90s with action movies when they were bad. Like, Pirates or Cutthroat Island didn't get a chance to look at the rest of the 90s and be like, don't do this. Let's not do a skull map in my...
No, let's do that. Kids. More movies need to have the female lead pulling the scalp of her father out of her undergarments and finding where the treasure is based on this, air quotes, document. More works of art need this. That would have been an
improvement.
100%. Like, I mean, we're talking about the beach next. Come on. if there was ever a better spot for a map written onto human skin stowed in an inappropriate place, it's the beach.
Yeah, it's just like lovable scamp. It was such a fucking old cliched story. Then you have the whole goddamn universe, and he goes and finds his ex girl is working with the mobster who wants to kill him and his boss.
Sure. Which, as far as we know, has no relation to the squid monster, whale monster, or whatever. Like, it would have been very easy for the movie to just be like, oh, this is a division of Crimson Dawn that drills up all these spaceship parts. But yeah, it's just, it's pure happenstance.
It makes no sense. It's like, it's so stupid. It's just all too convenient. It's too cute. Like, and I don't remember where I stopped. I can't remember. Somewhere after we've met Lando.
Okay. And even that didn't rescue...
I mean, it was too late. It was late. Okay. I'd rather...
Donald Glover, as much as Donald Glover is a beloved figure, he's doing a very strange accent with Lando.
I don't know.
It's not a Billy Dee Williams impression. It's something different.
He made a choice. Or someone made him. I don't know what's going on.
Does he wear a cape?
Doing this allowed him to film more Atlanta or whatever else,
yeah.
Good. Thank you. I'm glad that's the only redemption in this movie. That would put it above Tusk, in my opinion. But I was in bed. I literally couldn't get out of bed, and I chose to watch my leg move up and down rather than continue to watch this movie.
Coming in hot.
It's such a bad movie.
I mean, I don't begrudge you your opinion. I don't feel the need to defend Solo in any way, shape, or form.
That's good, because I don't want to kick you out of my house.
Fair. I'll stare at the wall at my own house. Thank you. I don't know that... I feel like the highest review I read was in, like, the B range. Which, I don't know. I feel like a person could get there if they're being charitable.
I guarantee the person who gave this a B was also like, I don't like the new Last Jedi because blah, blah, blah.
Honestly, I kind of feel the opposite. I kind of feel the opposite. Like, the backlash against The Last Jedi is so hateful. It subconsciously tips the scales in favor of any Star Wars production from the same company. Like, critics, you don't hear negative Last Jedi talk from critics. You hear it from fans who bring together YouTube videos,
right,
where the commentary is not as high scale as in what's happening in the last minutes of Take Shelter.
Right.
That's where you get into gay slurs and, like, Nazi references.
Those are the ones who like this movie.
Who? the morons, people that don't like Last Jedi?
Yeah.
I think everybody is pretty mad to hated it on it. I think everyone is more or less in agreement.
On Solo?
Yes, that this is, that people don't, people, nobody wants more
of
this.
If someone gave it a B, that means they liked it.
Sure.
And I'm just
but
saying.
But that's few and far between, I'm saying. I think, okay. I think you can get to a B in this artificial rubric that we're ginning up. You could easily get to a C+. I am at a C, which is my meh grade. Like, this is a movie that exists and isn't outwardly offensive in any way, shape, or form.
It's offensive.
It has moments of offensiveness built around, like, its prequel stuff, wherein everybody was concerned about the dice and the fucking gun and the last name, apparently. I despise that kind of stuff in prequels. It's not important. That's a collection of details that has nothing to do with the individual. I'm wearing a gray polo at the moment. Do we need to flash back to the moment where I went into Target and bought it? No, we don't. I just have it. It's not a part of my personality. It's just something that I wear.
This is great because I, too, am wearing a gray polo from Target.
They sell good polos
yeah,
there.
That's totally fine.
Polo. A polo story.
Let's move on.
How good this has been better, I guess, if you want to hold court. I mean,
okay, all right.
Writing your own movie is not good criticism, like saying what you would do in place of the director and everything, but
how
fuck
could this
it,
been
let's
better?
Engage.
Like, okay. The problem with Star Wars stuff, it can get too cute and everyone needs to be too likable, right? It's like Han Solo is this really kind of like one of the very cool characters was created, and we just given him like the most likable possible background. And
sure,
it
he's
makes
always
him
the underdog and
right.
the good guy.
Like
he's got the best intentions.
He's super smart despite coming from a poor background and
Meanwhile, he spent 3 years in the Empire in reprisal, cleanup, consolidation mode. Nothing interesting happened during that period of time.
Right.
He wasn't faced with a moral dilemma that he may
Nothing.
Or may not have been
Nothing.
On the wrong side of. It just, he's enlisting in the Empire, cut to a World War I-esque scene, and he's disillusioned and he's done.
He's always a scamp.
3 years went by.
He's always a lovable scamp, but he doesn't really do anything. Like, he's never really done, like, it never, this takes away any chance of the reputation he had as someone who is uncaring. Because
yes.
he's always cared. He's always
yes.
loved. So give him a background where he hasn't, or like, I still think a better story. He's the rich guy's kid or something like that. Like as opposed to
okay.
what the fuck we
sure,
got.
I see what you're saying. Just orphan Charles Dickens type. You're always gonna have some shred of sympathy for that person built in.
Yeah.
Whereas it should be earned based on what he does, not based on the space whale that he was indebted to and had to grind up spaceship parts for.
Yeah,
not very interesting. In talking with Pierce B about this movie, friend of the podcast, he more or less had the exact same criticism of we are meeting Han Solo, and as far as the movie is concerned, not a lot of time is going by between the end of Solo and like the start of Star Wars proper. Like maybe he's going to go on a few more fancy adventures, and then he's going to wind up in a bar shooting a green faced alien. But to get to that point where he is a dick and a jerk who doesn't care about anything and isn't interested in the rebellion or the force, and he's just taking jobs and he's exaggerating how great of a pilot he is, blah, 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 blah. The distance from that person to where he is at the end of Solo is vast, when it should essentially be, he should be right there at the end of this movie. Surely they planned on doing more of these and getting into that point. Or were they? I don't know. That's a very strange series of movies for a giant mega corporation to make, who was invested in like having these bouncy, flouncy, ethereal, not heavy movies, light movies. So yeah, maybe this is a fairly flawed idea from the first place, which I would totally buy because I think this whole I would agree that this whole proposition is fatally flawed. They're gonna do a Boba Fett movie. They're gonna do an Obi-Wan Kenobi movie. Like, this is dumb. This is dumb. You've got an entire galaxy. You've got many millennia of history that you could just make up and go back to a period of time where you don't know who is important and who isn't, and you can actually surprise audiences. Do that. Do that. Who gives a shit about any of these characters anymore?
Or just fucking hire a good fucking writer and don't write this shit in a room of 30 writers, which is clearly sure was written by 30 writers.
Yeah. I'm sure there was a series of comedians that came in and punched up the dialogue as best they could.
Yeah, largely failing. Which ones?
I don't know.
That reminds me of this meme.
Woody Harrelson hurt his thumbs at one point. You may have turned it off by then. I don't know. The robot.
And he's like, what, no more thumbs up, 7-Up for me?
No, he says he hurt his thumbs in a very, like, out of character way because he's like a hard smuggler.
Yeah.
Hard con man smuggler.
Oh.
So it's the laugh comes from, you don't expect.
Probably
so it's not a good joke, no. I'm talking myself out of it, but it's reasonably funny. Reasonably funny.
There's this meme going around about someone tweeted that liberals are upset because Republicans are catching them in comedy and comedians and jokes. And they always just post on really bad jokes, like the shit that fucking, goddamn, what's that horrific blob? Huckabee does.
Where he's explaining a joke in the same tweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, he punched up the script for Solo.
Yeah, probably. I would buy that. I would solely buy that from this movie.
I mean, Ron Howard's circle of funny friends at this point probably isn't very wide, unlike Mike Huckabee. Blam.
Boom. That's how you do a joke, Mike Huckabee. Fuck you.
I say this is meh and fine as a thing that exists. I don't want them to do more of these. I would like them to, I don't feel strongly about this kind of big budget filmmaking anyways. I'm in the same Star Wars zone as you are, as in these movies are okay. All of them are okay.
You know, and maybe mashing this right in between all the MCU movies I was watching.
Sure.
Made it even
a very similar tone. A very similar tone.
Just like one thing's done well, the other one is not done well.
Fair.
But this is more offensive than Iron Man 2, by far.
Oh man. Yeah, that is coming in hot. The Beach, our final movie, directed by Danny Boyle.
Let's talk up this one. Are we in agreement to talk this one up or what?
As I believe has been mentioned on this podcast before, had no interaction with The Beach. I knew that Leonardo DiCaprio was in it, and it exists in a tropical setting. That's all I had. But somehow it has a reputation, and I hoped that reputation would be based off of the truly insane and absurd and built-to-fail places that the movie went, and that therefore it would at least be interesting.
No.
I was incorrect.
No.
I was incorrect in hoping for that. I was let down. This is just a bad movie. As I said in my review, it's bad in the way that so many movies are bad, and that they just don't understand how the characters are coming off.
The
movie feels about them one way, and they are appearing to the audience in another way.
The hatred for this movie is the most interesting part of this movie.
I don't think it deserves hatred.
I
would call it worse than Solo, but it deserves to be pushed into the bin of obscurity, just like I hope Solo ends up in.
This is
a movie that should be forgotten.
This movie's a guilty pleasure of mine.
I think everybody involved would like this movie to be forgotten.
Possibly. Actually, I don't think that's true. I think the reason this movie got such a backlash, I'm going to circle back around to what you just said in a second, but the movie got this negative backlash because of the marketing. The marketing had it as, here's Lord of the Flies 2, and here's super hot Leo DiCaprio, first movie after Titanic, with his shirt off for the whole movie. So you're going to go into this movie thinking, A, it's going to be like Titanic. B, it's just going to be Leonardo DiCaprio being super good looking the whole time, and it's going to make all of the teens happy. And C, it's going to be like Lord of the Flies, it's going to be very gritty or something like that. And it's none of the above. And I was actually reading about this, about Danny Boyle and Leonardo DiCaprio discussing, like, they knew that DiCaprio's fame was going to carry this movie no matter what they did. And
it did make a lot of money.
It could have been, and they had an unlimited budget for this. Basically, Danny Boyle admits, like, "Hey, I should have. I just never had a budget like that. I didn't know what to do with it."
Sure.
But DiCaprio makes this movie because he doesn't want it to be like Titanic, because he knew that if he just does something super likable, like a lovable scamp or something like that. Which is why he turned down the prequels to be Anakin Skywalker. So around this time,
because that was a fine decision that he made.
It was a great decision he wanted to be an actual actor instead of just someone casting all these bullshit roles.
Yeah, like he would have made. I looked up the IMDb page for Leonardo DiCaprio. I don't have his filmography just like written on the back of my brain, but he would have signed on
back
to,
of your scalp.
Yeah,
in your daughter's pants.
That I keep in the unmentionables drawer. he would have made The Man in the Iron Mask after that was released after Titanic, but he would have either made that concurrently or while Titanic was being edited. So he didn't know how Titanic was going to come out. So this is released in 2000, and Titanic is 97, Man in the Iron Mask is 98. So this is like his first choice after Titanic. So as far as like an actor making like a big swing to like break out of how he's perceived, I don't know if this was the right vehicle, certainly, because like you said, he is still a shirtless hunk, at least on the surface. But you can see the impulse. Like a year later, he's going to be in Gangs of New York and Catch Me If You Can, which I feel like turns him into a completely different actor and links him up with Scorsese, which is where anybody would want to be. So this is a very strange stutter step that again can just be blinked off into history and never spoken of again because it's just so disposable and nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
There was potential here, I think.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
A lot of potential. I think he is legitimately bad in it.
He got a Razzie.
I think it's the worst.
Oh, he got nominated for a Razzie.
Okay. I really hate The Basketball Diaries. That's my least favorite movie that he's ever been in. He's playing a similar character, kind of in a way, but he's fine in that movie. Like, I think he's even a credible high school basketball player, maybe even. Mark Wahlberg's
I think he's,
big
no,
debut.
He's into basketball.
That wouldn't surprise
me.
He
runs in like one of those Hollywood games or whatever. He's actually pretty good.
Yeah, he's credible. This isn't my least favorite movie of his, but I do think it is the worst thing he's ever done. He should be able to always at least convey some level of charisma. He can do that in something like The Revenant, even, where it's a very like rugged style of charisma, but he's credible as like a leader, as someone who knows what they're talking about in The Revenant, even though he's hidden under layers of scar tissue and makeup and blah, 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 and hair and bear jizz.
See, like, I don't know. I think the movie wants to tamp him down as someone who's just innately.
Out of his depth.
Just
bad.
He's
utterly
innately
average.
Uninteresting.
You can't cast Leonardo DiCaprio in that role.
You may be right.
Like, he can't fake it. I'm not saying Leonardo DiCaprio is just some awesome individual. He's probably a fucking dirtbag in real life. The Pussy Posse?
Sure.
Come on.
Agreed.
Come on.
Agreed.
But on screen, he can't fake not having charisma. I don't know that he's ever done it. I don't know that anybody has ever asked him to. Outside of Danny Boyle on the beach. But he's really bad.
He's bad.
And again, he's bad in a way that I don't think the movie understands. Yeah, like, his shark anecdote is painful. Like, if you're sitting in that room, you're like, shut the fuck up, dude. Let's just go do whatever we do on this island for fun. And you stop talking because I can't listen to this anymore. However, everybody in the room is fucking spoon-feeding this up.
That should be a story that's told drunk, because the punchline's fucking great. Like, the punchline at the end there where he's like, the shark talks. I fucking love that part of it because it's so absurd, because that's how you tell a story like that. That's so obviously over the top made up, but everyone shouldn't be hanging on the edge.
The only person that isn't is someone we're supposed to think is the bad guy.
Right.
He's actually the smartest person in the room.
Although his response is so fucking lame too.
Yeah, these people are...
I mean, there's no one likable outside of the French boyfriend, right?
And this is the kind of movie where that might be on purpose. But
I think
it doesn't
that's
go
true.
Far enough. Like, another example is like Wolf of Wall Street, where everybody is supposed to be awful in that movie.
Right.
And Scorsese is just better at communicating this.
Yes.
He can demonstrate that these people are having fun, and on the surface, might even be friends. At the same time, they are all garbage people who will prompt claps in you when one of them dies of a heart attack.
I think if Danny Boyle redoes this movie today, that is something that is portrayed better.
I would hope so.
And I think he would admit that. Because I know, I was reading an interview with him. He admits that.
Here
are the things I would do differently. Or, you know, there's so many things I would do differently. I'm interested in reading the book. I would like to read the book. Cause supposedly, the source material is supposed to be pretty good. Because you could see this as being just the story of just a piece of shit trust fund person who...
Which is never
deeply unhappy, which
doesn't come across in the movie,
right?
Beyond like a person in his early 20s just traveling, and the expectations go along with that. You don't get the sense that he's like from some hugely wealthy family.
I just assume all these people would go to the Fyre Festival.
Sure, you imagine Europeans doing this differently. Like there are different connotations, I think, when you see like globe-trotting Europeans.
Yeah.
Like, maybe they just are filled with wanderlust and they don't have maybe they just have enough money, but they're not lousy with it.
Yeah.
Whereas you assume Americans, and there are plenty of ugly Americans in this movie to its credit, doesn't really dwell on it. And it frames the people on the beach as a different style of tourist.
Yeah.
Even though they are also terrible.
And that's why I think the movie missed out. If they would come right around and be like, oh, we're the same as those assholes puking.
At the same time, it is obvious when they start leaving people. This movie has something going for it.
I mean, because then you could talk about like groupthink and, you know, like.
I wish the Thai people had more of a role in the movie beyond like murderous pot farmers. Like, are they actually being, if not disadvantaged, but like actively put out by all of this frivolity? It is a nature reserve, which is why no one can go there.
Yeah.
There should have been footage. Like, the equivalent scene is like in Mad Men when they're having a picnic and then the picnic is over and they pick up their picnic table and just dump all the trash on the ground and they leave it. There needed to be an equivalent scene of that. Festering latrines, something. Of despoiling this wilderness.
One of the endings that they filmed was Tilda Swinton committing suicide.
Yeah, she ended in a fine place. Unnecessary.
Agreed.
The true bad ending is DiCaprio's character getting a nice moment of wistfulness and a happy soundtrack as the movie is ending.
Weird. I didn't like that ending.
Terrible. Killed someone and he directly caused the deaths of four people who suck, but four people nonetheless.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not putting their deaths on him. That was their own dumbass.
Sure, they didn't have to go there, but He didn't tell them.
He didn't know when he wrote the map that, hey, there's some pot farmers that are going to be trigger happy. They're going to shoot you.
Sure.
So he didn't know that. He tried to tell him, he told him not to go. He said, don't go. There's no beach. And they were like, no way, man. We see through you.
I really want to blame him for this.
The mercy
killing is worse, and that he does not stick up for the guy either. Like, he carries him out into the woods like he was Andy Crane in Deadwood just as much as everybody else does.
Yeah. And which is why he needed to be the one to do it, to do the mercy killing, as opposed to the French guy, Etienne.
Who's he to make that determination?
It's just wiped over. Like, because you're right, it is a wistful picture at the end.
Yeah, I'm gonna have some good memories.
And the French girl's fine with it.
Yeah, I'm gonna have some nice memories to look back on from my hell of the early 2000s, a stable job in an office. Take Shelter could not have been made in 2000. Let's just say that. That was a frivolous time for movies. I wrote a lot about Fight Club in my review and how this movie kind of wants to be that.
Yeah. You know what? I was thinking that too. It does feel like that. Like all the narrator in Fight Club's like, I am Jack's empty feelings or whatever.
Fight Club understands who its characters are and how poisonous that kind of thinking is.
Yeah.
The Beach does not.
Correct.
In any way, shape, or form.
It's like it was trying to...
The Beach almost wants to fully co-sign with these people living on this island. If they had just gotten medical help for the guy who got shark bit, everything's good.
Yeah.
You're doing all right.
It feels like they're trying to walk the line of in balance between the two worlds. Here is why these guys are full of shit, but also, hey, not so bad.
Yeah, and again, to bring up Fight Club, like, yeah, fine, whatever. You're not your wallet. Who's giving you this message?
right.
Both things can, like, that can be correct while coming from a cancerous source. And it's just not as deep as that. It's one of those movies where, as I was critiquing it in my review, I'm considering couching everything and but maybe this was on purpose. Maybe I'm supposed to be as irritated by all these characters as I do indeed feel. But because I'm so muddled on it, that implies, I think, sloppiness more than precision.
I would love to sit down and talk to Danny Boyle about this movie. I would do it.
It'd be interesting.
I'd be like, what happened? Why did this go wrong? What are we going for? When did the... I'd really like to know, post Titanic, when did producers get involved in the final cut of this? So
I don't know enough about the production.
I'm just curious.
It's crazy that you know so much about, so. But there's so much information about this movie.
Because it's such a baffling movie. Because you're right. There's something there, and it went fucking wrong. But it's not as bad as everyone says it. It's just so.
I really wanted it to. I wanted it to be more Crash Bandicoot, Leonardo DiCaprio strolling to the desert. I wanted it to be all that. What did you think? The island. That was fine. There's a tossed off line about how he plays too many video games.
Yeah.
That could have played a larger part. But that is very much the statement that's a statement that's in a movie from someone like Danny Boyle, who was born in the 70s, if not earlier. I don't know how old Danny Boyle is. You should know better. That's like a kids these days type of statement. And then for it to eventually turn into a video game when he's like going crazy with cabin fever, or the equivalent, isolation fever. I don't know what you would call that exactly, but I don't know, it's fun. Something should have come of it.
Nothing. It's just thrown in the
middle. No, yeah, it's just a little aside. That's a deleted scene if ever there was one.
It's so weird. It's such a weird scene. Although it makes more sense than the end wistfulness. I think you're right. Before we talked today, I thought the Crash Bandicoot stuff was this is so weird. You made a choice.
It didn't bother me. It didn't bother me.
But now I'm with you. The last scene is probably the worst scene.
Yeah, it's not a good movie. The beach. So the last thing we said about the beach is 90s music. Late 90s music, is it just so linked to its time that is unusable in anything forever after? Like, it can only produce a guffaw no matter what movie it's tied to? The standout here is this Moby song that plays at a certain point in the beach.
Porcelain.
Where you're just like, go fuck yourself, movie. you're not allowed.
You weren't
even allowed at the time. If I don't know when Porcelain was released to the public in all its majesty.
It had to be around then. Again, I think this is the production company coming in, because if I remember correctly, there are a lot of late 90s tunes that are being pushed here, and this is early for Americans. This is early electronic music, right? We really weren't feeling it.
Danny Boyle is no shirk with the soundtrack either. Trainspotting soundtrack.
Yeah. Great. And I mean, I like this soundtrack, but I don't think any of these songs are used very well in it. I like that song by Moby. It's great.
It's fine.
I added it to my Friday playlist. It's a fine song, but it's dating.
And it's instantly dated.
100%. It just doesn't work. I don't get what we're doing with this. I guess it's a happy-ish song for that moment, finding the beach or whatever it is. But I don't know. It's a little bit of top. Not a good selection for this movie.
Not a good one of many not good things about the beach.
But I think that's pretty. And I really wonder if it's production company driven.
These are all questions for Bill Simmons on the Rewatchables or something. But they will never do the beach. There's no chance of that.
We're going to start the petition right there. Actually, so I want to ask you, what is, I guess, the last question before we move on entirely and finish this up here? Worst addition to a movie, this Crash Bandicoot scene or the floating scene in First Reformed?
Oh, the floating scene in First Reformed is perfect.
It's terrible.
You're wrong.
That is a good movie. You are wrong, except for that scene.
Are incorrect.
That's a terrible scene. It's so weird and added.
You are incorrect, sir.
Like, why did we have that scene? I don't get it. I will never get that scene. I will never be on that scene side.
The director of First Reform, Paul Schrader, coined the term the transcendental style of filmmaking, in which he wrote a book about it in the 70s before he wrote any movies, I want to say. He started his life as a critic, his professional life. And this, I don't know exactly what it is. I haven't read his book or anything, but this is the transcendental style in filmmaking, where, you know, essentially you leave your body, and for the viewer to the movie, you feel what the characters are feeling in so intimate a way as to know that you're in the hands of a master, and they are literally leaving their bodies in that scene. And it's this perfect, pure moment that is infected by tendrils of oil in the ocean and garbage piles and tire mounds. And
it's a bad scene.
No, it's great. You're wrong.
It's a bad scene. Crash Bandicoot works better here.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Shane is spitting fire.
I just hate that scene. I really hate that scene. Holy Hannah.
They're both.
Guys, I'm going to have to get John a paper bag to breathe.
They're both characters who are like searching for like meaning and enlightenment. Whoa.
Not a good scene.
Whoa.
The floating part, not the good part. Everything else up until the floating, like we see, like they're floating in space, dumb. This makes more sense.
The intimacy that he has not experienced, and like she's not floating through space. He's getting that sensation. He's just so desperate for intimacy that it spurs a psychedelic experience in him that is soon poisoned by his depression, just like everything else in his life is.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Throw it in there.
Wow. I'm going to call an ambulance because I just had a stroke, and we're going to sign off here before the blood starts pooling out of my ears. Check us out on the internet soon, because this is going to end, because my brain's going to melt as the blood evaporates and dissolves my brain tissue. I'm amazed I can still form sentences at this point.
Barely.
MediocreMovie.club. Follow us on Facebook at Mediocre Movie Club. Like us on Facebook at Mediocre Movie Club. Follow us on Twitter at Mediocre Movie Club. Thank you for joining me tonight, Shane.
Thanks, John.
Have a good night.